Turn to the book of First Kings, chapter 10. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory, and overlaid it with the best gold. The throne had six steps, and the top of the throne was round behind it, and there were stays on either side on the place of the seat, and two lions stood beside the stays. And the 12 lions stood there on the one side, and on the other upon the six steps. There was not a light made in any kingdom. First, Second Chronicles.
Can you see all that? Can you see? Could he do some light?
Yes. Well, I just need to do it. Have a look. The 10th chapter of 2 Chronicles. Or rather, it's the 9th chapter. In the 17th verse. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory, and overlaid it with pure gold. And there were six steps to the throne, with a footstool of gold, which were fashioned to the throne, and stays on each side of the sitting place. And two lions stood by the stays, and 12 lions stood there on the one side, and on the other six steps, and there was not a light made in any kingdom. The book of Proverbs, chapter 30. Verse 29. There are three things which go well, yea, four are comely in going. A lion, which is strongest among beasts, and turneth not away for any. A greyhound, an eagle also, and a king, against whom there is no rising up. We have brought before us recently of a king who was guided and affected in his ways by people. We have seen also how in the Revelation on which we've been dwelling lately, that those that were guided and affected by such as Jezebel. There are others, of course, but it gives one to see, is that the mind and thought of God in regard to a king? The Son of Man, we speak of him sitting upon his throne. At the present time, because of all that he has passed through, he has been raised up and put upon his Father's throne until his enemies be made his footstool. This gives me to think. Is the thought in God's mind that the many should rule or that one should rule? And I come to this conclusion that what we speak of in the present day, for instance, as democracy, the many, the people, is not God's mind. Because we do not find that he puts his approval upon anything where man is told to rule himself. There has to be that one person, one king. That is why in my meditations upon the children of Israel, particularly Judah, where the kings are mentioned, the king becomes the responsible one. Like as we've had recently with regard to the churches, it's the angel to whom the Spirit speaks that is responsible. And in that way, I feel that God has something which this world is getting very much astray as regards. I feel often very much when we hear of some king being dethroned and democracy, the people coming up and ruling in power. I feel things are going contrary to the mind of God. So I read to you, there are two pieces, the two areas. But we find in 1 Kings of this throne which David made, or rather Solomon made. And it was to be a throne which had its certain characteristics. And I take it that these characteristics which we have with regard to the throne speak of the things of God. The only one who can truly sit upon this throne is the Lord himself. Solomon, no doubt, sat on it. Is a picture of the Lord in the day when he shall rule and have authority, when he shall be given his rightful place, when he shall rule with equity from the rivers unto the ends of the earth. And we find then that there are certain things about this throne which we might dwell upon. First of all, it says it was a great throne of ivory. I take ivory to speak of that which is durable, which lasts. It's remarkable that even fire doesn't consume ivory. I remember once coming out of the Congo with various trinkets, various other things, and at the custom office he says, I want to see those things. I says, right, you can see them all. And certain ones he scraped for all he was worth with a sharp knife and put it down. Others he did the same. And then he said, I'll test them. And he took a match and put it against one, just flared up. Burnt it all the way. Put it against the other, nothing took place. Fire didn't affect it. It was lasting. It was durable. Fire resisting. Now I take it that that is a picture to me of what the Lord's throne will be in the coming day. It will be a throne that will be durable. It will not fall like we get in the present day of thrones of this earth falling and tumbling down. It will remain sure, fixed, established, and it's the throne of Jesus Christ, the Son. We find another thing. Overlaid with the best gold. And take that to be what one might speak of as the best gold you can get, the best refined gold. I understand. The very best gold that they could make. And that speaks to me of that which is of divine origin nature. It's divine. Now this throne then, that's going to mark the throne in the coming day, is going to be a throne which will be durable, and yet it will be associated with that which is of God. There are six steps. The top of the throne is round, behind. There are six stairs on either side. And in the place of the seat, two lions stood beside the stairs. And the 12 lions stood there on the one side, and on the other, upon the six steps. And there was not a like made in any kingdom. Now here we find them. I turn again to Chronicles, because we find there some slight differences. It says that there, with regard to there were six steps to the throne with a footstool of gold. They were fastened to the throne. And the stays, or the handrests, on each side of the sitting place. Two lions standing by the stays. Thus we find then that there's a footstool associated with it. I think it is in I'm not sure. But it's mentioned somewhere where he speaks of the earth being his footstool. The heaven is his throne, and the earth is his footstool. Now then, it's a ruling upon the earth that this throne is associated with. It's not God's throne in heaven. It's the throne that's on the earth. And now the man that's going to sit on it is the great point. Now, in there, just look at it for a moment, in the book of Proverbs. Rather strange, we should get particular things in Proverbs, as we do. We get here, threes and fours brought together. We find here, first of all, there are three things which go well, or stand out in a stately way, if you might put it. They go well, and these four things are associated in my mind with the man that's going to sit upon this throne. It says, the lion which is strongest among the beasts, and turneth not away for any. Now then, there's the point. It's a lion, which is very much spoken about. See, in the throne, the lions, six on each side, connected with each armrest, there's two lions. We find the whole thing associated with lions. Now we find it here that the lion is a beast, see, as it says here, which turneth not away for any. No one can turn that lion from its purpose. Now I take it that the Lord, in the coming day, the only one, I can see no other, that's going to sit on that throne. He is the one that's not going to be turned away from what God's purpose is with regard to it. It's as the lion, determined to go what he knows to be the right thing. Nothing will stop it. What have we seen recently? Even kings, as you get it in everyday life. Kings are moved, guided, turned away, turned aside by people and other things. You see Ahab. What was he turned aside by? After life. He made that poor man give up that right which he had when he had that land and Joseph will say, I'll get it for you. We turn to Zachary. Now this is not going to happen with the Lord. We find another thing. It says he is Graham. It's rather difficult to tell what exactly that is, but it's a greyhound, and I take it that it seems to be like what a greyhound is, that it is strength in the loins. It can travel. In other words, it goes forward. It accomplishes what is in its mind. Now we find a he-goat. A he-goat, as we find it in Daniel, I think it is, about the Mr. Greeks, rise up as a he-goat. And what does he do? He pushes. The he-goat says, I'm going that way. He goes. So we find then that these things are a picture to me of all that pertains to the greatness of a man that's going to sit upon that throne. Fourthly, and a king. This is one of the stately things. One of the things that goes well. A king against whom there is no rising up. What marks this world at the present time, and has been all the way along? Rising up against those that are in authority. Rising up. A very sad thing to think that that should be what marks those that belong to the Lord. We report, and I'm afraid a lot of our troubles in our meetings, in our assemblies, is simply because that of the flesh resists that which is authoritative from the Lord. Now it says one thing later. It says there are six steps. And the steps are upwards. They're not downwards. There are six steps upwards. And if the Lord has to sit upon that seat, as he will do, in the coming day, in his majesty and glory, and rule in equity in the universe, having seated upon that throne, perfectly sure, steadfast, having the arms upon which he can rest, the seat upon which he sits, he has the back which is fixed, sure, certain, and his feet upon the footstool. He judges, he rules. But there are six steps up. And I want to speak a few words upon those six steps that the Lord might take, or he does take, up onto that throne. First of all then, I'll speak to read out of Hebrews. Hebrews 10. In John's Gospel, it speaks there about the Lord being the Word. The Word became flesh. Now, by the remarkable, I've noticed, it isn't in our authorized version, it says the Word was made flesh. But I understand that it is better put that he became flesh. In other words, it was some definite thing which he did. We find it in the other part of Revelation chapter 2. He became dead. Not that he'd been dead, but he became dead and was alive again. He entered into something which he had never been and knew anything about previously. He became dead. Now here it is then, that the Lord took his first step. He was the Word in glory. He took the first step, if I might say, in going up onto that throne, in becoming a man. The first step. Just in connection with that then, I read a verse in the 10th of Hebrews. Verse 5. Wherefore when he cometh into the world, he said, sacrifice and offering thou wouldest not, but a body hast thou prepared. A body. Now I take it that that body was, if one might almost say, rather different to our bodies. Because I understand the thought there is that in order that the Lord, the second person, if you put it that way, the second person of the Trinity, might become man, a body had to be specially prepared for him. We could not say that that body which the Lord had when he was born in this world was a body of flesh and blood as of the Lamb of Adam. We did not think of it. It was a special body prepared for him in order that he might become a man. And that body was specially prepared for him. A body in which he could lay down his life, shed his blood, and bring about the possibility of our not falling into judgment in his wondrous grace and love. Now then, I see there then the first step. The second step I see in connection with that as Matthew's Gospel, chapter 3. Chapter 3 of Matthew's Gospel. Jesus from Galilee to Jordan and to John to be baptized of him. But John forbade him, saying, I have need to be baptized of thee, and comest thou to me? And Jesus answering said unto him, suffer it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he suffered it. And Jesus, when he was baptized, went up straightway out of the water, and lo, the heavens were opened unto him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove, and lighting upon him. And lo, a voice from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Now we find another step, which he particularly took, and I think that's the thought, to my mind. There were six steps to take, and he took them. He took his first step. He came in incarnation. He came here a man in a body. The second step was he took his place among his own. He was found baptized with them. And he says here, it becometh righteousness. All righteousness is to be fulfilled. Although John felt, no, it's not for me to baptize you. But he says, no. It's right that you should baptize me. You are baptizing all those who seek to be associated with the coming kingdom. Now then, I'm one of those. I want to be associated with that company. And he was associated with them, and he was baptized. We find then that it was to become of us to fulfill all righteousness. And in that way then, he was associated with those that you might speak of that were righteous, that condemned themselves, that judged themselves, that taken themselves on the side of the coming Messiah. Now he says, that's where I'm going. That's where I am. And I associate myself with them. So we find then that there was a second step. And that was, you might say, in associating himself with his own. A third step. We'll read in the fourth chapter. Then was Jesus led up by the Spirit into the wilderness, be tempted of the devil. And when the tempter came to him, he said, if thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread. And he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. The devil taketh him up into the high, up into the holy city, and setteth him on a pinnacle of the temple, and said unto him, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hand they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against the stone. Jesus said unto him, it is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Again the devil taking him up into an exceeding high mountain, and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said, all these things will I give you if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Then said Jesus unto him, get thee hence, Satan. For it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Then the devil leaveth him. Angels came and used to him. Now, I think the third step is the ability to overcome all temptation. When, as it were, Satan, in all his desire to cause that man whom he knew to be the one from God, causing to fall. He says, I'm determined to make him fall. He tried it with Adam in the early days, and Adam fell. But here is one whom he tried to cause to fall, but he did not succeed. He made a third step, and that was to be above all temptation, to be turned aside. We find then another one. We find this one, we'll read Matthew 26. The 38th verse. We'll begin at the 37th. And he took with him Peter, and he took some Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful. And then said he unto them, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further, and fell on his face, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. Now here, perhaps I might read something which is very pertinent with regard to that. That's seen in the end of Jeremiah. The book of Lamentations, I read a few verses. In the first chapter of Lamentations, in the 12th verse, it says, is it nothing to you, all ye that pass by? Behold and see, if there is any sorrow like unto my sorrow, which is done unto me, wherewith the Lord hath afflicted me in the day of his fierce anger. From above hath he sent fire into my bones, and he prevaileth against them. He hath spread a net for my feet, he hath turned me back. He hath made me desolate and faint all this day. The yoke of my transgressions is bound by his hand. They are grieved and come up upon my neck. He hath made my strength to fall. The Lord hath delivered me into their hands, from whom I am not able to rise up. Rather sad when you think. That's a picture of what was the thoughts of going through the heart of the Lord. Here he was then in Gethsemane. And he knows that his life had been a life of sorrow. He's called the man of sorrows. And he sees, as it were, the touchstone before him. You must go to death. You must bear the judgment of the transgressor. And he could say, it's the transgressions were bound by his hand. Yes, it was there in the Garden of Eden, Garden of Gethsemane, that he faced the whole question. What was his demand? Father, if it be possible, why did he say that? If it be possible, why it was so hard upon his soul? It was weighing so heavy upon him. He said, oh, Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Now that was wrung from his heart. What must it have meant to him? It was a holy soul to be counted there as a transgressor. Now I see there in another story. He says, not my will, but thy will be done. As it were, he bowed up it all. He says, Father, I take it. Take it all that you say, all that has to be, I'm willing to do it. He took another step. Marvelous that he did it. The grace of his heart is beyond our comprehension. But there's another one. And in connection with that, I would turn to Hebrews chapter 9. Verse 14. How much more shall the blood of Christ, referring to the blood of bulls and of goats, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. For this cause he is the mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the Testament, First Testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. How wonderful. Here it is. He has to go to Calvary. Having taken that step in Gethsemane, where he, of his own, as it were, volition, said, I'm willing. He says, I'll go a step further. Nailed to the cross. I'll actually bear the judgment. I'll actually give my life for the Lord. For his own. How wonderful to think that he took that step. Calvary. We often meditate upon it. 3 hours of darkness came, covered it all over, out of the sight of man. That which took place between the Lord himself and the Holy God in heaven. He says, I lay down my life. He took another step. That wasn't the last, that was only 5. And I want to speak now about in the next one, in John chapter 20. We get it there in the 17th verse. When Mary had come and found him, he said, Jesus said unto her, touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say unto them, I ascend unto my Father, and your Father, and to my God, and your God. He took another step. He ascended up into heaven. He did it. That's my point. He did it himself. He took the step. I ascend. Having accomplished all that was to do, having accomplished the will of God, he now comes up out of the grave and he ascends. He's gone to the Father's throne. It says there in Ephesians, chapter 2, I think it is, no, it's chapter 4. In chapter 4, it says, wherefore he said, when he ascended upon high, he led captivity captive, and gave gifts unto men. Now that he ascended, what is it? But that he also descended. First into the lower parts of the earth. He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all things, that he might fill all things. Is there a more blessed person, a man who has a greater right than this man to sit upon that throne, that durable throne, that throne that is associated with God? Because I take it that the fine, refined gold would speak more of deity rather than divinity. It's the purest gold that's mentioned in Scripture. I understand. There it is. He took a man who was none other than God. God manifested flesh to come down into this world to take that pathway, those six steps, up to the throne of judgment. And it's his own throne. So we find then, in the fifth chapter of Revelation, we find something there which is rather remarkable. And one of the elders in the fifth chapter of Revelation said, and one of the elders said unto me, weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof. And behold, in the midst of the throne and of the four beasts and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as it had been slain. Before ever he could be the Lion, he had to be the Lamb. What did that mean? It meant that he had to become a man to tread that pathway that he did, right through even to death, and ascend into the heavens. And that man is the only man in the universe that will sit upon the throne of God in connection with this earth. May we, who know him, who have learned him, learned of his ways and such, cleave more and more to him and not be affected or turned aside by man what he would say.